Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Rick Neuheisel, former Washington, UCLA, Colorado coach, CBS sports analyst on your college football game days, joining us now. Where are you right now, coach?
I am in Phoenix, Arizona, where it's a balmy 114 degrees.
What do you do? What do you do on a day like today?
Well, I'm going to go try to muster through nine holes of golf. It's a little warm, but I'm going to try to do that. And get ready for some more college football conversation. Yeah. I got some CBS things coming up. And obviously, I do that full ride show on ESPNU radio channel, Sirius XM channel 84. So plenty of things to do. But going to try to go out there and slog through the heat for nine holes.
I've been thinking about you because I've been thinking that college football needs a commissioner. I think the Pac-12 needs a football advisor, and I keep thinking about leadership, and I think about Rick Neuheisel. I think you could be a really important voice in the room. Are you interested?
Listen, if somebody wants to talk college football, I am always interested. I think we're going through an amazing time right now. We'll look back on this time, and we'll have all sorts of arguments about what should or shouldn't have been done. But there's no question a correction is coming, and what it means for everybody is anybody's guess, but you better be paying close attention, especially learning vicariously from other conferences, other commissioners, other athletic directors, other presidents. You better be learning vicariously or you're going to be doomed to failure because you're going to be judged on the decisions you make as we go forward.
And you're right. I think, you know, we're going to have the 20,000-foot view, you know, a couple of years from now. We'll look back and go, okay, they got it right or they got it wrong. But the overall tenor of leadership, I'm looking at leadership within the conferences. I'm looking at leadership at the NCAA level, and I'm not seeing a lot of consistent leadership. Do you agree with that?
Well, the NCAA level is non-existent because they really haven't had a hand other than compliance on NCAA football. You know, ever since the bowls were created long, long ago, with some guys in some smoke-filled rooms determining who was going to be national champion and who was going to play in this bowl and that bowl and so forth, the NCAA has been outside looking in as it pertains to college football, especially, I think it was 1984 when the Supreme Court ruled that television belonged to the institutions rather than the NCAA. And so schools could go out and make their own television deals. They ceded those rights to the conferences, and now that's where the conference power lies. That's why these five guys who currently hold commissioner titles at the autonomous five level are the power brokers. And three of them are deciding to go forward, and two are deciding to call it a day and wait for the spring. I think it's less than 50-50 that we actually get a spring in. But it's an interesting turn of events, no question about that.
Did it surprise you that the Power Five didn't stick together?
No, it doesn't, because all conferences are not created equal, from whether it's the talent base that lies within, whether it's the fan base and the zealousness that they exude via attendance. Whether it's their television rights. At day's end, they're not all the same. And so we've been kind of watching a tug of war for a long period of time, ever really since the BCS started, in terms of, you know, figuring out how to strategize, whether it be schedules or recruiting advantages. for each of these conferences. So as it pertains to now getting to that money trough that's known as television, and you know, backing up the Brinks truck, because some of these guys are making unbelievable bundles of money, which is one of the reasons it's so surprising that the Big Ten decided to step away this fall, because they are one of the clear haves in the amongst the autonomous five, making close to $50 million per school based on their television rights with Fox, ESPN, and the like. So it's a monumental loss. I think Barry Alvarez had it at $100 million for his department alone that was lost, given the fact that they're losing their football season and lost, 350 of the $600 million that was going to be allocated to universities in the basketball tournament.
Rick Neuheisel, our guest, former coach at Washington, UCLA, Colorado. You can catch him on SiriusXM Radio or with CBS Sports on College Football Game Days. The I've been advocating for the Pac-12 to have a football advisor who's got some football background. Again, I keep coming to you. I want to hire you for this job. I should be your agent. Is that important? Like, when you look at the Pac-12, you know the conference. Do they need a football voice in that room when decisions are made?
Well, this is not to say that they don't have one, but there's no question that when you're talking about strategies as it pertains to athletic departments across intercollegiate athletics, you better have somebody that has a hand on the pulse of football, because football is the engine that drives the train. Football is the revenue producer. Men's basketball can produce revenue and does handsomely at a number of institutions around the country, but it's not consistent enough to say that that's where you can put all your energy. It requires football, and it requires football on a major scale. And for the Pac-12, who've been outside looking in as it pertains to the college football playoff each of the last 3 years, this is a tough pill to swallow, to be missing the entire season.
Rick Neuheisel is with us. What was your favorite stadium? What is your college football favorite stadium?
Oh, goodness. There's so many. Having now traveled to the SEC as an analyst for CBS, you know, I was at that Alabama-LSU game last year in Bryant-Denny. That was an unbelievable treat to see that game, not just because of the two teams on the field who are obviously extremely talented, but the scene and the light show that had been created. I don't know if you saw the Georgia-Notre Dame game. I guess that Georgia put in the same kind of amenities with respect to the light show that can be part of their stadium, and that was just a scene. Alabama was really ticked off that they didn't get a night game before because apparently they put theirs in earlier. But those scenes are special. But I guess if you're asking my favorite stadium, I'm going back to home, which is the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl. Yeah. You know, I have so many memories there, and I don't think there's anything that touches it in terms of its place in college football. To me, it's the Mecca, it's the Holy Grail, and every January 1st or January 2nd, whichever that day is, that we reconvene and celebrate college football with the granddaddy of them all, that sun shining down on those mountains tells it like it is. God loves football.
Coaches are known for team building, building culture, building chemistry. How much more challenging is it to do it when you're doing it with the roster splintered up and, hey, we're going to do it. Yeah, Zoom calls. Like, I talked to a coach the other day, said we haven't met in person yet. You know, that's absurd.
You know, I can see some real problems in trying to create that kind of identity that you're looking for. But I also see it as an opportunity to spend maybe more quality time. We as coaches get going on football so, you know, fervorously, because that's what we do. We want schemes. We want to be able to X and O with everybody, and we want players that can, you know all the different fundamentals, which foot to step with, what's the right place to place your hands if you're taking on a block or you're delivering a block. And we get into all that stuff, and we forget sometimes the glue of all this is the relationships that are forged between player and coach. And to me, because of this pandemic and the inability to get, into the trenches, if you will, of football, we've had an opportunity for coaches to really learn more about their players and to get to that glue, if you will, to learn about somebody's past, to learn about what his dreams are for the future, other than just playing at the highest level. If coaches squandered that chance just because it wasn't convenient, because maybe guys had to be apart, then they missed an opportunity. Because to me, at the end of the day, and we all go through this as coaches, there's going to be adversity. The way to get through adversity is if there's absolute trust. And we're seeing all kinds of fractions in trust right now, especially as it pertains to testing and all that stuff. And people worrying about it. It flared up at Florida State. It flared up at Syracuse. It's flared up at Pitt. And on and it goes. And we saw a player uprising in the Pac-12. Hashtag We Are United came forward. And this isn't the fault of the coaches. As a matter of fact, I think there are a lot of coaches that are behind many of the proposals of that mandate to the Pac-12 power base. But at day's end, what's really critical in this world of coaching is to really know your players and to be vulnerable to let them know you.
Rick Neuheisel, our guest. Oregon, I thought, was lined up to have a nice season. Penei Sewell, left tackle. Now, what do you see in that Oregon team? And Mario Cristobal has to be, like, privately beside himself because he, like, this was lined up. And I don't know if Penei Sewell should play if it's a spring season.
Great questions, John. Listen, I think Mario Cristobal has done an unbelievable job in the short period of time he's been the head coach there at Oregon in building a team that really likes one another. That was evident during the Rose Bowl. They're building a team that has the toughness to be intersectional. You know, it's not built on any one just facet of football. It's not just a finesse team. It's not just a power team. It has all of it. Almost inherited Mario's toughness. A guy who grew up in the trenches, coached offensive line for Nick Saban. You got to imagine that there was going to be a little bit of that chew nails type of mentality. But to do that in Eugene, Oregon, and then go around and recruit as well as he's done and have the energy to recruit as he's done, I think speaks volumes about how much this guy's enjoying this job. So it was the perfect compliment. It was a season that I thought, was set up well for the Ducks. They were going to get that showcase game against Ohio State early in Autzen, which, as we all know, me all too well, is a very tough place to play, especially on a game day like that would have been. I'm sick for not only Mario, but all those kids who were, dying to play.
Now, Autzen, although it was a tough place to play, down deep, those Duck fans love you.
Oh, they love me. I spent almost all summer, John, in Bend, Oregon. There's so many Duck fans in the state of Oregon, which is, what's great about college football. We have these regional biases and our love affairs with our hometown schools. And they were friendly, but they would all come up to me, I hated you. That's part of the magic of college football is that, we can go toe-to-toe, we can spar and put everything we've got into it, but at day's end, we can dust ourselves off and still admire the guy on the other side of the ring. So I had great bouts with Chip Kelly, had great bouts with Mike Bellotti. As a matter of fact, ran into Mike over the summer in Bend and got to chew the fat with him. He told me all about the Ducks and how good he thought they were going to be. And so, listen, it's a great game. We all hope like heck the game can get its footing again and get back to where we all want it to be, in particular on the western side of the United States, because those of us who have toiled in the Pac-12 know what a great conference it is, know what great fans we've had, and know what great players exist on this side of the country. And unfortunately, there's been too much of an exodus of those guys. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll get things turned around.
Yeah, I'm looking at, again, I want to come back to leadership. And, what do you think the Pac-12 needs leadership-wise moving forward?
Well, I don't know that there's a void in leadership. I think we just have to look at what our brand is perceived as amongst those out there making the decisions as to where they want to go to school. I think one of the things that has to happen, we've had so many of these one-off games, right? Oregon traveled to play Auburn in Dallas. The year before it was Washington to play Auburn in Atlanta. I think we need a one-off game in that new stadium down in Los Angeles. What is it going to be called? SoFi? We need a one-off game where we bring somebody to play the best team in the Pac-12 that particular season, or at least thought to be the best team, to come play a preseason game there. So we make this as a footprint of college football rather than just leaving it to the Southwest and the Southeast. I believe that we can shore up some of that image stuff. I think we've got to really look, and this is part of the correction that's going to go on in college football. How many sports do we want to have in our athletic departments? If we're going to try to subsidize, and Bernard Muir at Stanford made the hard decision to let 11 sports go, if we're going to try to subsidize 20 and plus 20 sports, we're going to have to understand that football, at least relative to the rest of the country, is going to take a hit in terms of how it's subsidized. And people will say, well, how much does football need? Well, the question is not so much how much it needs, but how much does it need to compete with the other football programs in the country that are basically whining and dining and bells and whistling these kids when they take trips to that portion of the country. Not saying that an arms war is the answer, but we have to at least be competitive in that arena. I think we've got to work on scheduling. We've got to decide how and try to exert pressure on some of these other conferences to travel to the West Coast rather than just play them in one-off games. That was going to be a part of the scene this year when Michigan would travel to Washington and Oregon was going to host Ohio State. But, you know, with the situation now, it's not going to happen. And when will it happen again? I'm not sure. But those are the kind of pressures that need to be exerted so that we can put our best foot forward and start getting on the right side of the ledger. It's not an insurmountable task. It really isn't. It wasn't very long ago when Urban Meyer took the reins at Ohio State that the Big Ten was considered the last rung on the ladder, right? It was in the throes of a slump and thought to be behind the other four power conferences. Urban Meyer goes to Ohio State, figures out how to go get a bunch of those SEC kids, much like Mario Cristobal has done, and the next thing you know, the Big Ten and the Buckeyes are back in rare air. And so to me, it just has to be a concentrated effort to how do we get kids to stay in the footprint? How do we lure kids to the footprint and continue to evolve as an entity so that we're primetime television as well? The decision to go Fox and ESPN to try to create a little bit more revenue, which was deemed brilliant at the time, probably cost us some time slots and some promotion spots. You know, CBS, my company that I work with, may not pay the most, and we'll wait and see what happens with the SEC down the road. But in terms of promoting the brand and promoting, it was worth its weight in gold. So maybe there's some magic in the next television deal, which comes up, I guess, in a few years, that the Pac-12 will position itself much more in a supported way from a promotion standpoint.
My listeners want to know, how come you don't bring your guitar on this show?
I'm trying to spare them. And we haven't got any assurances there aren't younger children. It may stunt their growth. That's the problem.
You have fun with that, though, don't you? I mean, you've played with other coaches. You've played, that's something that you enjoy.
As long as no one takes it seriously, I can go all night. I can play 30% of every song. As long as no one there listening or singing along thinks that I'm trying to be a musician. All I'm trying to do is have some fun. And I know a ton of songs, and I know a ton of songs that everybody else knows the words to. So you can sit there, and there's nothing like people sitting and singing together because it breaks down any sort of nervous energy that might have been in the room prior to that.
When did you pick up a guitar? What was the spark for that?
So my mom, years ago, was, you know, hell-bent that every kid in our family, I have three younger sisters, all had to play an instrument. And there was a piano in the house, so we all got piano lessons. But the piano lessons all happened in the afternoon after school. So I'd come home from school and have to do this piano lessons, and the piano looked right outside a window that had all my friends out there playing football, basketball, baseball, what have you. And it was like torture. It was absolute torture to have to sit and go through every good boy does fine when you really wanted to be out there playing sports and the scales and all that stuff. So ultimately I said, Mom, can I switch? Can I go to another instrument? And so she said, you can play the guitar. And so the guitar guy came at night and the rest, as they say, is history.
I love that. Next time you come on, just play us one little, you know.
We'll have a Canzano special. How's that?
I love that. All right. Rick Neuheisel, good luck with your golf game. Hydrate, okay? It's 117 degrees out there.
Here.
Thanks, Coach.
I appreciate that. And don't give up on us, Pac-12ers. We're going to find a way to rise again.
There he is. You're my pick for the next football advisor in the conference. They need a voice in the room. Rick Neuheisel, thank you, sir.
See you, John. Take care.
All right, there he is. 117 degrees. And by the way, have you heard him play the guitar? Oh, it's a treat. You know, I think he undersells that. And I love the way. I'll play some of Rick Neuheisel's guitar and singing next for you. Also, Herm Edwards, top of the hour. It's a great show today. Rick Neuheisel was terrific. If you missed that interview, grab the podcast on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get a podcast. He is going to bring a guitar the next time he comes on. Here's Neuheisel singing one of his trademark songs. Again, don't take him seriously, he says.
Born in the SEC, they were SEC, don't make them think about it logically, they were born in the SEC, yeah. I grew up loving the Crimson Tide, shed a tear the day Bear died, sure am loving Coach Nicky, he's right. I like my football Southern fried, yeah. Born in the SEC.
Alabama Adriana, you could go for some of that?
Yeah, that was good. I always love to hear that. Yeah. He should bring his guitar and we'll do a duet.
All right. Oh, yeah, that's on. You've been playing. Why did you pick up the guitar? Is this a pandemic thing?
No, I picked it up last summer, but I picked it up because I always wanted to learn and I just wanted to stop saying that I was going to learn one day and wanted to make it today, so I just picked it up.
Is it hard? Is it difficult?
It's very difficult, but it's really fun.
All right, coming up, Herm Edwards will be joining us. We'll talk football and Fig Newtons with Herm Edwards, Arizona State football coach. Why don't you leave it here statewide? You got the ball.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.